From Jefferson Public Radio, I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another JPR live session from afar. My guest today has just released a record with help from Francesco Tarisi called They're Calling Me Home. It's Rhiannon Giddens. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's great to chat with you. Where are you in the world right now?
I'm looking out on a darkened sea on the coast of Ireland in a little town called Greystones.
Wow. So, North Carolinian. Connects, makes music, and becomes partners with an Italian, and you end up in Ireland.
I know. It's a fun one.
How did you end up there? And obviously, pandemic aside, why are you still there? What is it about Ireland that makes it a good home base?
Well, it's amazing when you have children with people and they live in a place, you kind of tend to stay there when you don't live with them anymore because you want to be with your children. So both Francesco and I, you know, married Irish people and then split from them, but we have three kids amongst the two of us. And it's, you know, it's more than just the children, though. I mean, it's a good place. It's very local, you know what I mean? Mm. It's not a huge population here. And it's a good place to come off the road to. Because it's just, you know, and it's a very music, I mean, there's a great tradition of music here, and you know, so it's a good place, nice people, and, you know.
How long has it been a base for you?
Well, I mean, what is a base at this point? it's, you know, I guess we decided to move the kids over, my ex and I, to start their schooling. So, I mean, it's been a good five, six years. Mm. I've only been here, like, I've got rented a house and stuff, you know, 3 years ago. So, like, really, in terms of moving I was just kind of between the States and Ireland until the pandemic. And, you know, now I'm buying a house and, you know, paying taxes here. Kind of like, I live in Ireland now. Whereas before, it was kind of like, I live on the road, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting. It's very interesting. Mm.
I'd love to talk about how the two of you connected musically to create not only this new record, They're Calling Me Home, but the one that preceded it, There Is No Other. Because you have a background as a classically trained vocalist, and then, of course, an incredible catalog of traditional roots music that we know from Carolina Chocolate Drops and Our Native Daughters. Francesco is a jazz pianist, but the kind of jazz that you might hear on, like, ECM records. Sparse, creative, evocative kind of stuff. Not traditional mainstream jazz. Those worlds seem quite distant. But yet there was something that drew you together to create music.
Yeah, they do. We always like to say on paper, it makes absolutely no sense. Like, no parts of our world really overlap that much, you know? Not even our instrumentation. Like, there's just... you know, our geographic locations, where our family and culture is from. It's just really interesting. But the way that we look at the world and the way that we think about learning and the way that we have investigated our music and our own cultures is very similar. And so there's a lot of parallels in our life. We always like to joke that I went to school for Italian opera and he went to school for Black American jazz, you know? And then we ended up meeting somewhere in neither of those places, you know? But there's aspects of those things that we do bring into it. And we both found that given the kind of breadth of both of our just knowledge bases and just interests, you know, we're kind of a unique fit for each other in that we never want to stop learning. Mm. And I think that that's how we approach everything, is that we're just kind of, we're both sponges. And we also want to know the real story, and we want to, you know, we're not fobbed off by sort of the simplistic tale, you know, we're always kind of like, wait a minute, we want to know more. And so there's a lot of similarity in that. So it's really allowed us to communicate quite easily because we just, our tools are all different, but the intent is the same.
I read somewhere that you once said that you're kind of using a really dull machete to cut your own path.
It's kind of true, yeah.
Sounds like something he might be doing as well with the kind of music he creates.
Yeah, I mean, he ends up, you know, being the only person at the Hague Conservatory to be studying jazz and early music, you know, like Renaissance and Baroque music. Like, nobody was doing that. So we're both oddballs in that we don't really allow the boxes to keep us from, you know, what we're interested in.
And is it true it was actually kind of a blind email that he sent over that first made the connection for you guys to make music?
Yeah, he had heard about the Chocolate Drops and was, you know, obviously really keen on the history of jazz and kind of was like, oh man, the black string band, that's like the missing link, you know? Mm. Everybody talks about the brass bands, but nobody talks about the string bands. And then somebody told him that I lived in Ireland, you know? And so he's been very collaborative artist. He's always reaching out. So he just reached out to me and he said, I think our sound worlds would sound good together. It was literally just like that. And then of course he always likes to remind me that I didn't answer that first email. So he had to send another one, you know. And then of course I was like, oh yeah, that sounds great. Sorry I didn't answer your first email. But
and so did those musical worlds sound good right out of the gate, or did it take you a while to figure out how to combine the two musical languages?
Well, both, because it sounded good right out of the gate. Like, we managed to meet up, you know, shortly after that email exchange with a cellist, and we have a recording, a little Zoom recording of just that jam of just how our three worlds meet, and it was like really cool stuff. And then years passed before the logistics ever worked out that we could do a project together, because he'd email me and go, can you do this thing? And I'd be like, no. You know, can you do this thing? I'm like, no. And so, you know, a few years later, he reached out again. He saw me, you know, on a magazine or something, and he reached out again and said, hey, like, how are you doing? You know, and that was the moment, you know, where I had a project that I was at, like, day two of us kind of catching up again after that initial meeting. I was like, hey, I'm working on this ballet. Do you want to do it with me? It's just like pure instinct. I was like, I just think this is going to be right, you know? And it was. And that's kind of it. We didn't look back from there, really.
Well, you guys have certainly found your feet. This new record is absolutely beautiful. It's called They're Calling Me Home, out on Nonesuch. Rhiannon Giddens is my guest today on JPR Live Sessions. Information can be found online, rhiannongiddens.com. I know Francesco is going to help you on the tunes today.
Yeah.
Do you know what you want to play first?
Well, I think, you know, starting with the opening track of the record is kind of sets it up. It's called Calling Me Home.
Fantastic.
An old friend lay on his dying bed, held my hand to his bony breast, and he whispered low as I bent my head, oh, they're calling me home, they're calling me
So friends, gather round and bid me goodbye. My body's bound, but my soul will fly. My little light shining in the sky. Oh, they're calling me home. They're calling me come to sail away. I know you love for me to stay, but I miss my friends of yesterday. Oh, they're calling me. They're calling me home.
Rhiannon Giddens is my guest today on JPR Live Sessions, along with Francesco Turisi, her duo partner on the new record called They're Calling Me Home, out on Nonesuch Records. So across this catalog of songs, and what are there, 12 or so, there is an underlying theme of both home and death. And those are not necessarily different things, depending on where you come from in terms of spirituality and all of that. Mm-hmm. They, very similar themes. Why was this the kernel of a new album for you?
Well, it wasn't the plan. We were going to go to California and we're going to work with Joe Henry. We had all this, we had all these big plans. Life is what happens when you're making plans, right? So, it's just, these are the things that were surrounding us. I mean, we were, seeing numbers of death, deaths every day of COVID and not being able to get home. I mean, I haven't been to North Carolina since last January, which is the longest I've ever been out of the state in my whole life, as long as I've ever been out of the States, period. Yeah. Those are the things that we were kind of dealing with. And like these songs were helping us sort of deal with these things. And so they just became this project.
Is there a comfort level to the songs because of the lyrics or because of the overall sound of the music?
I'd say all of the above, like what we've been doing is sort of trying to recreate aspects of our home cultures. We've been doing it with food for sure. And music. So it's not only the words, I'd say the words of something like They're Calling Me Home or Calling Me Home is very, there's something that's just so comforting about the idea of release and of knowing, being at peace with death. It is the other side of the coin to say something like, oh, death, which is a death that's coming when you're not ready, And I'd say that's kind of the majority of COVID cases. It's like people are not ready to go. And so they're both comforting in different ways. Like, oh, death is comforting in a way that it's like, man, we're like just another group of people in the long chain of human existence who've had to deal with this. It's like we're not special, but it kind of connects you to that human experience, these old songs.
What is it about this traditional style that speaks to you so strongly and makes you want to dig and explore and uncover the stories?
Well, one of the reasons why I've always been interested in history, but not like kings and princes. I'm interested in like the daily life of somebody in Wales of 1490. Like, that's interesting to me. You know what I mean? What are the similarities? What are the differences? Like, what was their worldview like? And how is it the same and how is it different? And these songs really connect for me to just like regular people. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying not to swear on your radio program. You know, just like they connect us to just like people like us, you know, like people who are just like getting on with their lives and they're doing their thing. And it also just takes away the exceptionalism to us. You know, we aren't exceptional. We are just like everyone else. And that's actually beautiful. And these songs, you know, when you think about all the generations of people who've sung them, it, you know, and for hopefully I would think some of the same reasons that we're singing them, you know, and it's a connection thing. And it's not to say that there aren't beautiful pieces of classical music or pop music that's been, you know, made in the last 20 years that can connect us to, you know, the larger human emotions. But for me, that's always been a kind of a special thing is that, you know.
Do you ever stop and think about whether Rhiannon Giddens' songs are going to be in that river decades from now? Someone else will be looking back and singing them?
Well, I want them to do what they do. And if they're helping people understand a certain portion of history, which I know they're being taught in classes, people have told me, then that's what they're for. I mean, I'm not super concerned about whether people are going to be singing them in 50 years. If they're of use now, I feel like I've done my job, you know. Mm. And they're, whether they stay in posterity, like whether they become something that is a legacy, I have no control over that. And really, it has nothing to do with me. You know what I mean? Because it's all, I mean, whether a song like catches in a community or of a time and becomes something that is carried on is really far beyond the maker, you know, because who wrote My Dearest Dear? Who wrote Oh Death? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And ultimately, it kind of doesn't matter.
Right. Rhiannon Giddens is my guest today on JPR Live Sessions. She and Francesco Terisi have released a beautiful new record called They're Calling Me Home on Nonesuch Records. RhiannonGiddens.com is the web address. I'd love to hear another tune. What do you want to share next?
Well, I mean, while we're talking about death, I mean, we could do the other side of that coin, that Oh Death, you know, because, you know, when we do it live, it's just the two of us, you know, on the record, it's me and a chorus of me's. So it's nice to, you know, have a slightly different, I mean, it's still me and Francesco, but yeah, we can do a little bit of that.
Wonderful. This is Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Terisi on JPR Live Sessions.
Oh, oh, death. Oh, oh, death in the morning. Oh, 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 death. Spare me over till another.
That is called Oh Death. Rhiannon Giddens, Francesco Terisi playing for us today on JPR Live Sessions. Rhiannon Giddens joins me from her home. Does that sound weird to say your home in Ireland?
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, it's really, really weird.
You've given us a good gift. Thanks.
Well, thank you.
The instrument that we see you with most often is being commonly referred to as minstrel banjo. Mm-hmm. And minstrel itself, the term, has got a lot of negative baggage associated with it, and minstrel shows and some of the music and the performers that came out of that era. And yet it's something that you seem like you have embraced and tackled and tried to change the narrative on that. For folks that don't truly understand what a, quote, minstrel banjo is, what is it? How is it different than the banjo that someone might see at a bluegrass show or something like that?
Well, first of all, we have to, you know, we have to separate the minstrel show from the music of the minstrel era, right? Like, so I know there's some people who want to change the minstrel banjo to like the classic banjo, or, you know, there's different terminology, but I say minstrel because it then brings up this question, you know, the very question that you asked, because it is, yeah, the banjo that I'm playing was a design that, you know, minstrels played, you know, and that's the sound of it. But why I connected to this banjo, my particular banjo is a replica from 1858. You know, why I was drawn to that sound is because it is much closer to the sound of, you know, the banjo as it was invented by African, you know, Americans or African Caribbeans in the Caribbean in the 1700s. So that's the sound that I, you know, and it was a commercial instrument, so it travels well and all this kind of stuff. You know, mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons, but the music that went into the minstrel show, that is the earliest cultural Creole, you know, that exist, you know, in terms of where it went and how it informed American culture. I mean, it's massively important.
Yeah.
And it's not something we talk about with any kind of sophistication. You know, we just go, oh, minstrelsy, terrible. sweep it under the rug, while not acknowledging that, you know, 8 out of 10 of our folk songs were minstrel songs, and they had much different words than we learn in fourth, you know, in second grade. So I just think I'm trying to humanize the culture and the music that was fundamental to why there it was even a minstrel band. You know, what are they playing? You know, and so I try to talk about that in a way, because, like, really ultimately, the music of, you know, my African American ancestors is tied up, you know, in the music of minstrelsy, because that, you know, they are a part of where that music came from. So yeah, it's really an important piece. And so I'm looking at it really as kind of a musicologist. You know, it's like, let's investigate, let's excavate, and let's talk about how terrible minstrelsy was and what the effect of the theatrical components of it have on American culture, which is huge. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater, and let's look at this music from a point of view of what can we gain by digging into this and learn about, you know, the building blocks of American musical culture.
Yeah, thanks for sussing that out. It's not an easy topic to just scratch at a little bit.
No, it is part of my job. You know, I'm one of the few, like, I'd say, Black artists who is regularly sort of talking about minstrelsy in a very sort of musical way, you know? Mm. So I kind of take it as one of my, I guess, penances in life, I suppose.
So the instrument itself, I mean, to a layperson, I'm going to throw out a couple of terms that come to mind when I hear it played. And I, even on this album, it's sort of bendy. It sounds kind of rubbery. How is it constructed differently?
Well, it is fretless. It's very low. It's in C. It's got a skin head. It's got a wooden rim, and it's just got a deep, deep, deep sound, you know. Mm. And the fretlessness of it, and it would have had gut strings, so it's just a very different sound to the. It's about as different from the modern banjo as the modern banjo is from the guitar, you know.
Do you find it's easier to blend that with other styles of music than if you were playing a modern banjo?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really fits. It fits with orchestras. It fits with frame drum beautifully. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just mm-hmm. because it's really coming out of this massive group of instruments that, you know, I mean, the modern banjo sounds great with a lot of things too. It's just, this sounds good with a whole different set of instruments, you know, yeah. And they're the ones that I happen to be interested in. So it works out.
Before I let you go, earlier you mentioned your ballet that you had been working on. There was an opera. There is an opera called Omar.
Yes.
That is soon going to be in production. It's not been permanently tabled. Where do things stand with that, and what's going to happen with Omar when it's ready?
It's going to be next year at the Spoleto Festival. As the Spoleto Festival is the first premiere, but we already have like two or three other organizations who are now coming on as I can't say who they are yet, but they've come on as commissioners, and they've promised to have premieres of it. So I'm super thrilled, because like a lot of, you know, modern opera, you're guaranteed that first premiere and that's it, you know, and you don't know what's going to happen, you know? So the fact that there's interest, you know, in the opera, like, because we don't have a full score yet, obviously, because we haven't put it on yet.
Yeah.
It was supposed to go on last year, then this year, and then, you know, it just means a lot. It just means that we've kind of struck a chord, and, you know, I'm working with Michael Abels, who is a fantastic composer, film scorer, and I wrote the libretto, and I really think it's a very fresh take on the folk and classical. I kind of think it's a new way of looking at how to combine those. I mean, there's a lot going on in this opera. I mean, the Omar bin Said, who is a, you know, Islamic, a Quranic scholar, like stolen from his homeland in Senegal, sold into slavery, ends up being a slave for 50 years, writes his autobiography in Arabic. I mean, it's a lot we're tackling with this opera. So I'm scared, because, you know, I'm sure I got stuff wrong, and I'm sure people will be upset with me. But I think, you know, there's been a lot of support for it. And I'm just, you know, I'm a banjo player. So I will always fall back on that. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just a banjo player, I didn't know. But I have done, you know, I've done as much research as I can, and as a composer. And so, yeah, I am excited. But yeah, I think that is where the classical world has to go. I mean, there's nowhere else to go but to go where the world is going, you know.
I am so thrilled that you had time to do this. It's been a pleasure to meet you and to chat. It is a beautiful new record. Please pass along my thank you to Francesco for helping out with the performances today. They're Calling Me Home is the name of the new record out on Nonesuch Records. Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Terisi. RhiannonGiddens.com is the website to go. You can learn about this project and all of the other things that have been going on and will be going on once all of this passes. Will you share one more tune with us?
Oh gosh, how do we go out? I think that let's give you the one that somebody asked me if I'd written, but I didn't. It's just an old song that is so on point that it was a little bit eerie, and that's Waterbound.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
get home. Waterbound and I can't get home. Waterbound and I can't get home down to North Carolina.
Called Waterbound. Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Terisi playing for us today on JPR Live Sessions. Their new album is called They're Calling Me Home. You can get information at rhiannongiddens.com. Rhiannon, thanks again for doing this.
Thank you. It was lovely.